Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
G-A-L-D-E-M. G-A-L-D-E-M.
This song is good.
Welcome to a brand new season of Growing Up with Galdem. Inspired by our book, I Will Not Be Erased, our stories about growing up as people of colour.
My name is Nyala Arboyne, and I'm the life editor at Galdem.
And I'm Natty Kasimvala, former editor and longtime contributor at Galdem.
Galdem is an award-winning media company committed to sharing the perspectives of people of colour from marginalised genders. Each week, we invite a guest to respond to old diary entries, letters or text messages from their younger selves. The point is to nurture important discussions about growing up.
You can find Growing Up with Galdem on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Maliha Abidi is a Pakistani-American artist, author and neuroscience student. She was born and raised in Karachi, Pakistan, and migrated to California, United States at the age of 14. As an immigrant, her experiences play a huge role in her work. Her work mainly focuses on women's rights, mental health, anti-racism, travel, culture, and shining a light on societal issues. Her debut book, Pakistan for Women, Stories of Women Who Have Achieved Something Extraordinary, combines her passion for art and writing, bringing together stories of 50 women from Pakistan alongside their illustrations. Her latest book, Journey to America, 25 Immigrants Who Transformed a Nation, will be out in June.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us, Maliha. Your latest book, Journey to America, is finished, I hear. So congratulations to that. How are you feeling about it all?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'm still kind of, you know, thinking about Rise, because that just, which was like my second book, which just came out. It feels like it just came out, but yeah, it came out in October, and then in the US it just came out. So still thinking about that a little bit. And for Journey to America, I think it feels really far to me, but now that you mention it and I'm thinking about it, it's like coming out in super soon. So yeah, just feeling grateful to be able to, you know, tell stories through art and writing. And yeah, it's a passion of mine. So really grateful and excited.
What's like one thing you hope that the readers will take away from this latest offering?
Do you mean Rise or Journey?
I guess either or both.
I think, well, with Rise, it's more personal and it's something that, you know, it took me 2 years to complete and there was a lot of research that went into it, even when just, you know, developing the concept of it. Whereas Journey was a work for hire. So even though I had contributed a little bit into the concept and what stories go into it, majority of it was from the publisher. So whereas Rise was very much like, you know, my own baby. So it's just, you know, I feel more connected to the second book and just the journey of it all, you know, just writing and the illustration part of it and the volume of the book as well. Like there are 100 stories. So just the amount of work that went into it as well, I think that also kind of made it a bit more special. But I think what I'd like people to take away, the readers to take away from the book, is firstly appreciating that when we talk about diversity, many times we only see limited amount of stories being highlighted and majority of them are from the US or from the UK and not from other parts of the world. And of course, when we talk about diversity, it is talked about in such a, you know, like, oh, people of color is equal to minorities, whereas in the world, globally, we're not a minority. Women are not a minority. So just, you know, being able to kind of really showcase that through a book and making sure that, yeah, we can talk about well-known stories that we're so used to seeing in the media, but we can also talk about lesser-known stories that are just as impactful from other parts of the world and, you know, truly celebrate diversity and Black, Indigenous and women of color from around the world and not just from select countries.
Yeah, it's so important to have those stories told. So your first two books, Pakistan for Women and Rise, have had a lot of impact already and have received rave reviews. One reviewer said for Pakistan for Women, it's an amazing, simple and unique way for those living in or outside Pakistan to teach adults and children about the incredible women of Pakistan. The vivid palette and colours used make it a breeze to go through. How did the ideas for those books come about? And why did you feel the need to undertake this epic work?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question, Naya. Well, with Pakistan for Women, I think it was like, I didn't start that with, you know, that I want to write a book. It was more like sitting in a cafe of a bookstore where I used to go often. And it's really sad that during the pandemic that cafe closed down. But I just used to see books like Rebel Girls, for example, which actually like pioneered such books where you have a portrait and then you have a short bio. And like the artist in me was just really excited to see those books and, you know, always being able to discover new stories. But then after a while, I was just like, oh, there's like, there are no like Pakistani stories or only like story of like one or two people from Pakistan. And at the same time, I was seeing stories of like books coming out of different women and from, you know, different countries and communities. And so I think I wanted to do like a series initially, if I'm being very honest. I wanted to do like an Instagram series where I'm celebrating stories of like 15, 25 women from Pakistan and just kind of telling their story through social media. And that's something that I've been doing for 10 years now. Of course, growing up in the age of social media and just kind of like, you know, having that, I want to say like almost like a mic in your hand in form of social media platform. So with that, I started to like write down the names of the women that I wanted to add to the social media series. And then I started writing down the names of Pakistani women that inspired me. And the list was supposed to be of 15 to 25 women. And then it became like a list of 80 women without me even like doing proper research and stuff. So which was like a clear indication to me that, okay, like, you know, there are so many stories to be told that I cannot possibly just do a series and then move on to the next thing. I really wanted to do something bigger with this. And so that's where the idea of the book really came from. And I'm just really grateful to have worked on that book. And just, you know, it was very much like a self-initiated project. Like, I didn't have a team or a publisher or anybody really, like, you know, it was more like YouTube and how do I get this published? Oh, there's Kickstarter. Let me check it out. So it was very much like, you know, not just the beginning of my journey as an author, but also just learning about so much about the publishing industry as well and the lack of representation in it. So yeah, and when I was writing Pakistan for Women, I didn't think that anybody would really read it, because in my mind I was like, well, if anybody cared about reading such a book, it would already be published. But still I wanted to write it because I was like, okay, maybe a handful of people will read it, or, you know, they would maybe learn something new about the stories. But also I wanted to make sure that we are slowly removing, like, the stereotype of this is what Pakistani women are, this is what Muslim women are. And Pakistan in itself is such a diverse country, and we have so many different sorts of stories and different professions that women are, you know, really excelling in. But even within Pakistan, there's such a issue of appreciating those women, you know, women educators, activists, scientists, firefighters, mountaineers, you name it, you know, we have them all. But just still, again, a huge lack of appreciation. And so there were so many different motivations that I wanted to, you know, why I wanted to create the book and what kind of, you know, kept me pushing and in general, you know, kept me motivated to create it.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you mentioned there that the book was self-published and pretty much entirely self-funded as well, which is so much work, more work than even I can wrap my head around. And I wanted to ask, like, what would you say some of the biggest challenges were for you throughout that process, and how were you able to kind of stay motivated and navigate through them to get to the end product?
Yeah, thank you, Natty. Like, now looking back at it, just thinking about the process, like, I'm feeling so tired. But, you know, I think one thing was, which was, I think, a blessing in disguise, that I actually didn't know how much work it would take. So I was doing the work as the tasks were coming in front of me, if that makes sense. So, for example, like, I started with creating the illustrations and writing the stories. And I was like, okay, that's pretty self-explanatory. Like, you know, I have to do those. Otherwise, I don't have a book, right? When I was, and like with the art, I'm a traditional artist. So with the art supplies that I used for the portraits, I was working at an art store at the time. So I used to get 30% off of, you know, employee discounts. So that was the total party. Like, I was just so grateful. And I was a university student as well. So 5 days a week, I was at uni. And then 2 days a week, I was working at this art store. And that's how I was able to buy the art supplies for 50 portraits that made it into the book. But of course, there were like so many failed portraits as well that nobody has seen. So that was like the initial kind of how I funded the artwork. And then when I was close to finishing the artwork, I was like, oh, what's next? What do I need to do next? And that was when it hit me that, oh, like, this actually needs to get published too. And I have no idea how to do that. Keeping in mind that I started this book when I was 21 and it was finally published when I was 23. And it was just really interesting, like, exploring different ideas. I thought in terms of, like, publishers, you can just send them an email. I didn't know about the process of an agent and, you know, like submitting a manuscript or all of those different things that people in the publishing industry are very used to, or an author needs to go through in order for you to become a professional author. I mean, I was sending out emails to all kinds of publishers, and then this one publisher replied that we're not interested in publishing a book about Pakistan or for Pakistanis because nobody in Pakistan reads. And I was like, what did this person go through that, you know, like, who heard them from Pakistan that they're saying such a thing and generalizing it? Because surely they're just, like, you know, being ignorant. And
the whole of Pakistan. Yeah. That's so rude.
Right? Nobody in Pakistan reads. And it was just like, it made me angry when I read it. But now looking back, it's just like funny to me. It's like, wow, I feel bad that you work in publishing, so I don't even know how many, you know, authors or works of just written works that you have, you know, like you have not allowed them to go forward just because of your bias or your own, you know, ignorance. But regardless of that, I was able to, like, you know, go to Kickstarter because of the community and the support. I was able to have the funds and gather the funds to publish the book. All of the money went into publishing the book again and printing it again. And I honestly thought that a handful of people will read it, mainly from Pakistani community. But it wasn't just the Pakistani community that appreciated the book, but it was people from all around the world who were just as excited, if not more, to learn about stories coming from Pakistan. And I mean, it's something that I am really grateful and excited for, and something that really inspired me and empowered me as a Pakistani woman myself, because there were stories that I knew about, of course, but I didn't know the depth of it as well. You know, so just feeling like inspired on different levels. And
that's incredible. A real labor of love. So moving on, we know that you work a lot in the NFT space, both as an artist and an expert, particularly with Women Rise. And you're often given the title NFT Queen, which I love. Before we dive into this, can you kind of define for our audience what an NFT is? And to me, because I still don't understand.
Well, if I'm being very honest, I don't think there is anyone who is an NFT expert. I'm definitely not an NFT expert and not an NFT queen as well. But I'm really grateful, again, to say that, you know, that we have an amazing community at Women Rise, and it is a project that's very close to my heart. Yeah, like I am learning every day about NFTs as well. And so, yeah, definitely not an expert. But NFTs are basically these non-interchangeable unit of, you know, data that is stored on the blockchain. And when we talk about a non-interchangeable unit or data stored, it can be a form of different digital assets or a digital ledger, if you want to call it that, or digital files. And they can be digital files as art pieces or music or video or architectural designs. And it's quite incredible because it can be sold and traded and it can be authenticated, especially if you're an artist and, you know, in the traditional art field, if I'm selling a painting for $100, but if my collector is selling that painting for $300, they are making the $200 profit, and there's no way for me to, like, you know, kind of keep track of my royalties or any way of, like, even getting any profit of that or knowing where my art ended up. But on the blockchain, you can trace it. But of course, there are so many other applications that the blockchain can be used for. I personally see it as a revolution for artists because there's so many hurdles that artists in the traditional field have to go through. So it's just quite incredible. But yeah, very much, I mean, you know, NFTs are an application of Web3, which is still being built. A lot of it may sound exciting, and a lot of people also like to pretend as if, like, it's happening right now, but we are at a very, very early stage of it all. So, you know, if you're somebody thinking that you have no idea what this space is, trust me, a lot of people who are already in the space feel the same way as well. And there's plenty of time for you to learn. So there's a lot that's being built and a lot to be excited for and to look forward to.
Thank you. That makes me feel a bit better. Could you tell us a bit more about Women Rise?
Yeah, for sure. So Women Rise is, like, it started off as an NFT project. And basically what that means is, you know, it started off as a project that had like 10,000 NFTs in it. And the concept of it is very similar to my traditional art, where I'm creating portraits of women, where I am trying to tell stories of women. And it has turned into a community of all kinds of people from all around the world who are excited about amplifying various causes that impact women all around the world, amplifying, you know, their stories as well, and being able to contribute to change, especially when it comes to girls' education. And with Women Rise, we've been able to contribute to 4 different organizations: Malala Fund, The Girl Effect, The PAD Project, and Soul Afghanistan School. And we have contributed more than $110,000 to these 4 organizations. And we have different initiatives where, you know, for our community and different activations that we have. But our ultimate goal in, you know, the metaverse that's, of course, also is being built, it's not here yet, that's being built, is to build the first school for the 258 million children who are currently out of school. 129 million of them are girls. So there's like so many different things that we're trying to do with Women Rise, and we are almost building as we're going forward, if that makes sense. So while we have a lot of aims and intentions, like we are trying to build intentionally, a lot of the things around technology, let's say, or a lot of the things around what is possible is still unknown and unpredictable. And this space does move really fast. So you never know what we set out to do, but what we will end up achieving.
Interesting. I'm taking it. I'm learning a lot at the moment. And I know that there's a lot of conversations around kind of the metaverse, NFTs, like the revolution behind it, like you mentioned. And then there's also, I guess, naturally non-believers as well, or people who seem to have like these kind of assumptions about how it might affect or not affect like artists of color, people of color, within in the same ways that capitalism and any real like capitalist system might work, through like exploitation, accessibility, all of those kind of similar themes. I was really interested to hear what your thoughts are on that, and if you had any little bits of guidance that you would give to artists of color who are looking to dive into the space.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, firstly, thank you for that question. 100%. The bias that we see in the traditional art field will very much still exist in the NFT space as well, regardless of people, if whatever, like people want to pretend that this is like a utopian land, or, you know, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Of course, there's so many incredible things about it, just like there's so many incredible things about social media and how it's able to connect people. But at the same time, there are the bias or the exploitation, like it continues. And of course, because, you know, like people who are, let's say, were big in tech and web two, meaning like Instagram, Facebook, big tech, are the same people who are able to make it first in web three as well. So a lot of the structures will be similar. And that's why we need more people, and especially people of color from around the world and not from select countries only, so that we can onboard people early on and so that we don't make the same mistakes as we once did. But also on the point of digital accessibility or the digital divide, when we talk about the school at Women Rise, it's not as simple as like, oh, creating a school in like one of the metaverse companies, but it's also about bridging the digital divide, because part of the reason why 258 million children are out of school at the moment is because of the lack of resources, because they don't have a physical school building in their town or in their, you know, wherever they're living. They don't have access to books. They don't have access to internet. Especially with the pandemic, we saw that a lot of the students were able to hop on Zoom and continue their education, but then millions and millions were left without any education. And, you know, in areas where education was limited anyway. So working on the digital divide and creating the school and also changing the culture around education when it comes to especially girls, it's really important. It's not just about, again, creating the school or bridging the digital divide. It's also about like a cultural shift in a lot of communities that don't see any benefit in educating girls. But if we are talking about the benefits of educating girls, from being able to combat climate change, to adding trillions of dollars to world economy, to a better healthcare system, to better economic situations for families, there's endless better health for women and girls around the world, decreasing the rate of child marriage. All of these are benefits to educating girls. And we can do that if we are using the innovation and tech that we had, the latest one that we have available. But of course, it needs to be done in like a phased approach, because we cannot just talk about this and then like have a building in the metaverse or a virtual building and that's it. Like, you need to make it accessible. And then there's also, of course, an entire hurdle of language as well. Like, I often think about what is the word for metaverse or NFTs when it comes to Urdu, which is the language that I speak. And so it's very much being built, and it's very much, you know, like people sometimes are getting ahead of themselves and think that it's here, but it's actually not. It's very much still like, you know, in progress. And there needs to be a lot of progress before we can brag about this space, or before we can truly, like, you know, call it something that we can be proud of.
Thank you. I feel like I've learned a lot. Even though you say you're not an expert, I feel like I've learned from your expertise anyway.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Now to move on to the next section. Yeah, it's time for your extract. So do you think you could read your extract?
Okay. This one was funny, especially because like the things that were written around this. So yeah, I was just like thinking about this day. I very vividly remember this day. So here's the extract. I asked Papa today if daughters are better or sons. He said, daughters. And that made me feel better, but what is people's obsession with having a son anyway? It is so annoying whenever name of the relative I can't say says that Papa should have a son. She never makes sense to me on why sons are important, but always just gives a vague scenario that she tries to back up by old religious stories. It's not that I'm not as smart as or as capable as Saudi Bai or Ailey or Maz or Mitch. These are the names of my male cousins. Abba says I'm smarter anyway. Abba is my grandfather. So this is an entry from my early teen years, and this is a very frustrating conversation that comes up a lot. I'm the only daughter, and my father is the oldest son to my grandfather. So it's just really, there's no kind of end to this argument, if that makes sense. And there is no explanation. Like, there is no, you know, kind of measure to why this is being said. But I think the only kind of explanation they give is because it helps the family bloodline move forward. Is that even accurate? Yeah. So that's the explanation that I get. And then they try to back it up with like religion, whereas there's no such thing in Islam. So this is a very frustrating thing. And it's actually, the more I was researching for my first stories for my second book, Rise, I was coming across stories of women from China, from India, from Bangladesh, from a few African countries, from South America, and how this bias for daughter versus son exists in different cultures. So when I hear people say things like, oh, it's like in Islam, like, you know, just being able to carry forward the family name or something, that's how I know it's bullshit, because there's so many different cultures that say the same thing. And, you know, sometimes they give the excuse for religion, but it's mostly just like, you know, I feel like there are a few reasons like why it once was a thing, but now it's just sort of like it has carried forward, and now people, even it doesn't make sense to people, and it's sort of like they're just okay with it. But like mostly sons are seen as the breadwinners of the house. In my culture, girls are supposed to get married and go off to their husband's house or live with their in-laws sometimes. And so sons will be able to take care of parents when they're older. But, you know, like all of these different things, like just excuses after excuses, there isn't any like main reason for it. But this is something that I have really grown up with, and it still bothers me to this day.
I was going to say, I mean, the British royal family literally do the same thing. So I feel like it definitely goes across multiple cultures. What did it feel like now reading this extract years later?
Well, you know where I say, what is people's obsession with having a son anyway? So I at least have an answer for that, because at that time my knowledge was limited. Therefore, it didn't make sense to me at that time. And maybe I had accepted it for a while as well. And I was like, okay, like, you know, maybe people just should have sons. But reading it, honestly, it doesn't seem like that long ago, because these conversations still happen around me all the time. And if it's not directed directly at my dad, it's directed at somebody else in the family. I have a cousin. She has a beautiful daughter, and she hears this all the time. And she told me this like day before yesterday. And people don't really understand how this question of have a son can impact people's mental health. What if somebody is like, you know, going through, you know, fertility issues? Or the science of like, it's really not up to anybody that what the gender of the baby will be. But mainly, like, why is it considered a bad thing anyway? Like, people don't reflect on it. And it's really interesting. But yeah, it's like across different cultures, and it's not limited to just one thing. Just people like make up stories and excuses to, I guess, justify their ignorance.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. And it's something like Nye said, it's so pervasive and it's almost universal. And you're so right in that it might have come from like these old traditions, but like it's being carried forward without question. But then I also found like the reassurance at the start that you get from your father really sweet to read. And I wondered a little bit more about, especially now hearing that he was also the first son of your grandson, like what was your household like outside of that kind of societal pressure? Did it feel like that relative's obsession was like at odds with what you were learning growing up? Like, did your dad kind of try to instill something different in you? What was your childhood like?
Well, the best up thing was that these people never said it in front of my dad. So it was always like, oh yeah, let's go talk to the child. You know, like it was just so weird. And And like my dad, I don't think he ever kind of like, because they never talked about it in front of him. I have a very close relationship with my dad. I was the one who used to just go up to him and just, you know, just kind of ask him that, like, what is the reasoning behind it? And my dad is like very straightforward. He was like, they're ignorant. They have literally no reason whatsoever. Like, yeah. And my grandfather, he passed away a few years ago. And then he used to write a diary. And my uncle, he saved one of my granddad's diary. And in there, he had written that he saw me as equal to 10 sons. And today, whenever that relatives brings up this argument that, you know, like my dad should have a son, that uncle of mine just throws this in their face that, or don't you remember like our dad's diary, so what he wrote and stuff. But the thing is that even if like we don't talk about the comparison of like being equal to that many men or whatever. I still don't fully understand how people justify this in their minds. Yeah, but from my dad's side, like, I never felt this pressure. I know there are women out there, women and girls out there who go through this, even in US. You know, I have come across so many of my girlfriends that are, you know, oh, my dad wanted a son so that he could play baseball with him. Like, the most dumbest reasons, you know, it's like, you can play baseball with your daughter too. Just, yeah, just things like that. But I'm grateful to say that I never had that from, like, even for a moment from my dad. Usually it's always like the women that I come across in, like, my community that I hear these arguments from. But that could be because a man would never really talk about this. Yeah, I feel like it's just one of those things where it's like, oh, like, I would never talk about something as private as, like, having kids or something in front of, like, the opposite gender kind of a thing, you know? So it's not necessarily that they don't share this thought process, but because I feel like a lot of the pressure that sometimes women face of having a son, whether they're saying it to others or whether they're taking the pressure to themselves, comes from men as well.
Yeah, it's also, like, inherited, isn't it? And it's, like, that kind of same thing of, like, if I've experienced this kind of complex that makes me feel inferior, I have to kind of justify and uphold it in order for it to make sense. And so, therefore, I pass it on to you as this beautiful gift of, like, I want to make you feel the same, almost, whether they understand that it's wrong or not, you know? Yeah, but super, super interesting. And we did actually have a question as well about that kind of, like, comparison, obviously coming from, like, a more global perspective. You've lived in the UK, the US, and there's this kind of perspective or perception that these kinds of severe patriarchy exist in, like, the global South, and, like, that's over there and we are, you know, like, we're better over here. And I wanted to hear what your thoughts are on, I guess, just the different ways that patriarchy can present itself and exist across the globe, and how you've kind of navigated through those differences.
I definitely think that no place is better than the other, if that makes sense. Like, when I never thought that when I moved to United States, oh, this is, like, so much better than Pakistan. I had a miserable experience, not exactly because of patriarchy, just because I moved to US, like, at a very young age, and so I was homesick and the culture shock and just being a teenager and just, like, not speaking the language that well, like, not being that fluent in English, and then having some of, like, my schoolmates, like, make fun of my accent as well, and, like, all of those fun things, you know. And then slowly I was coming across, like, the state of, you know, how Muslims are treated in this country, how immigrants are treated, how Black, Indigenous, and people of color are treated. And it is honestly, like, the issues that we see in the US, they have almost traumatized me to a point where if somebody asks me that, will you ever move back? I travel there often for work, but I don't think I will. Yeah, just because there's not a break in the incidents that negatively impact communities of color in the United States, that long enough break that I can even consider that anymore. Not to mention how every broken system in the United States impacts people of color the most and people from, you know, underprivileged backgrounds the most. And I think that's something that perhaps either privileged people in the US don't want to face, or they think the others, like, who are outside of the US don't notice it. And yeah, so it's just, there's so many, like, issues that we can talk about that I feel like there is no comparison, because there are issues in the US, and there are issues in Pakistan, and there are issues in the UK. And similarly, you can say, like, good things about these societies and these countries as well. But honestly, like, they're all so different and they impact people of color the most. Like, even in Pakistan, if there is, let's say, a humanitarian crisis, is going to impact women and children first and foremost, you know. So even if majority of the people in Pakistan are all brown people of color, but still it's going to be then women and children getting impacted by it most, or members of the LGBTQ plus community are getting impacted, or ethnic minorities, because again, Pakistan is a diverse country. And when we talk about the US, it's communities of color, immigrants, members of the LGBTQ plus community. And it's the same in the UK as well. It's like different issues in different places. So I feel like there is no comparison. It's just like there needs to be a lot of progress that needs to be made.
Yeah, I feel like when you've got intersecting identities, you can't just like leave one at the door. They're all interacting with each other all the time and change depending on, yeah, where you are. Finally, what advice would you give to that younger self who's kind of grappling with this idea of the value of daughters compared to the value of sons?
I feel like I want to say a few things. I want to say that firstly, don't be discouraged by this, but also don't be motivated by this, if that makes sense. So by motivated, I mean, don't let this be something that, you know, that kind of burns you out because you're trying to show that you are just as good, because you are already. But like, even before you try, you are. Like, this is like just a made up concept in people's minds. And like we talked about, this is across societies, communities. It doesn't really matter where, what place we're talking about. This is like a global thing. So that's one thing, because I was somebody who kind of used it as a motivation. And still at the end of the day, even though whether I'm comparing myself to like my male cousins, or, you know, whether I'm comparing myself to sons around me, and you're not really looking for your own approval if you get into that cycle, if that makes sense. You're actually getting trapped that looking for that answer. Why is this like? And you can give them all the answers, but they weren't asking a question in the first place. So they're not looking for an answer. It's not that it was a question from them of, are daughters better than sons? No, it was like, you have a son, you don't have a reason for it, blah, blah, blah. So don't get stuck in that cycle. Secondly, there is no such thing as like any gender or their value being better than the other, especially when they start giving reasons of like, financial contribution and, you know, like all of those things. It's just not justified, as simple as that is. So yeah, and I feel like more than the women out there who may be dealing with this, that, oh, why my daughter? I feel like I want to say something to the parents who may be also feeling this pressure from the society, from the community, because I have seen horror stories, if I'm being honest. Like I have come across stories where people literally kill women because they're unable to have a son, as if like it's up to them, not understanding the signs, not understanding anything. Women have been divorced in the most, you know, in societies where if you're a divorced woman, it's seen as a stain on you. So then you're, you know, like socially unacceptable on another level. So firstly, you're unable to have a son, and now you're divorced as well. So, you know, like just being a nightmare for women. So like parents who are out there who may be dealing with this thing, like this is, there's no basis for people to, like people who are saying this to you, just ask them like, what are your basis? You know, just revert the question back to them. Don't see it as a failure on your end just because you have daughters. Like I think in Islam, actually, people who try to back it up with religion, in Islam, actually, it says that daughters are a blessing. So any child is a blessing. So it's like, whether people are trying to back it up with religion, whether they're trying to back it up with whatever bias they have, it doesn't exist. It's all in their head. Like, I can honestly go on and on talking about this, but just don't allow people to even say this to you anymore.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. And what do you think your younger self would think about where you are today?
I think I have no idea, actually, because my younger self was dealing with a lot. So I don't think I often had the time to sometimes like think about the future as such. But I think I'd be happy and just feel grateful. Honestly, at a different time, I may give a completely different answer to this question. Because I'm thinking about that time when I wrote that entry, you know? So if I'm like thinking about a completely different time when I was young and, you know, in a different mindset, I think my 17-year-old self would be very happy. And, you know, because at that time I started taking, 16, 17, I started taking my art really seriously. And I had a lot of different goals set, clear vision of what I'm trying to contribute through my art and through my writing. So just seeing that after 10 years as well, I've been continuing on this path. So yeah, it's just, I think I'd be grateful overall.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I think it's interesting, right? Because it's one of those conversations that is at various different levels, depending on the country that you're in. And it can seem like, and I think Maliha kind of touched on this, but it can seem small or big, depending on your context and how much weight it's given in your community. It kind of reminded me of these stories I'd heard, especially about countries where, like, oh, this might sound really ignorant, does China still have the certain number of babies rule? Not anymore.
Not anymore.
But I remember in geography learning about that and how it impacted this literal safety of female babies, because it was this pressure to only birth sons because of this restriction, you know? And it's something that is, like I said, is so pervasive. At one point it was so universal that you almost forget that, like, it's a danger. It's a very dangerous myth to perpetuate.
Exactly. And happens definitely here in the West. But yeah, I thought it was really interesting though, how, like, gender discrimination or like the patriarchy and how it kind of feels different depending on where you are. I'm going to have a completely different experience in Jamaica, where everyone looks like me, than I will with my gender, I guess, in the West. And you can't separate those intersections. I thought that was, yeah, really interesting. It makes it really hard to compare almost.
Yeah. And I also loved what she said about obviously not listening to any of it because it's all rubbish, but also not allowing it to be the only fuel that pushes you forward to prove your value.
I like that.
Because I think that we can...
Because you're still working from the same place.
Yeah, it's still defining you in a sense, you know? So I think that's a really key thing that in all walks of life, whatever kind of discriminations that you're facing,
like
making sure that you are not only pushing yourself forward to reject and to prove wrong all of these stereotypes that are put on you.
Yeah, that was solid advice.
This has been an II Studios production.
Thank you so much for listening. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. You can sign up to become a member at gal-them.com for access to exclusive discounts with our favourite brands and partners, early access to tickets for Galdem events, an advanced copy of our annual print issue, and so much more.
Make sure you're following us on all major social media at galdemzine for the latest independent news and culture. Or visit our online website, which is gal-dem.com.
Don't forget, if you loved this episode of Growing Up with Galdem, be sure to subscribe, rate and leave a review. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.